Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast. My name is Graham Elwood.
Sounds like you almost forgot.
Like, I did. Wait, what is this? Yeah. All the traveling that I would not be surprised if I just forgot what this is.
Welcome to Cram, everybody.
You snooze, you lose, crammers. Get on those hamster wheels. That would be weird if I woke up a la Bob Newhart and thought I was still on the set of Cram.
Yeah, and in the hamster wheel.
In the hamster wheel with Icy. That'd be all right.
So not bad. 176
176 today. Episodes. Yeah. It was neat. It's exciting we're doing this. And it was kind of a lame weekend for movies, so...
Yeah. We've got a lot to talk about, though, still. Even Sans guest, a ton to talk about. You know, sometimes we do, like... doing a show without guests so we can really get concentrate on some of the things that we really want to talk about. And sometimes guests cancel. So those are the two things that kind of
I think
of
just coming off of a holiday weekend, yeah. I think there was some guest coordination issues.
Yes. So no worries. We've got a lot of great guests lined up too.
Yeah. September's looking good. It's going to be fun.
Another guest from Australia coming on.
We do?
Yeah.
Who?
It's the guy that runs the BBC.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the guy. CJ. Yeah, CJ, who we did a show for. Yeah, I just booked him. I'm like, who?
Who are you talking about that I just emailed?
You're insane, yeah. Chris. The guy that I coordinated to be on the show and told you about it. See how I could almost forgot what the show we were doing? that's going to be a really good show. And I believe lovely Jackie Cation is going to be here this month.
Yep, and we're going to have Keith and the Girl first week in October.
First week in, that's right, because they're going to be out from New York for the festival. Right. I believe Ian Edwards we're possibly working on getting his schedule to come in here. He does that soccer podcast on All Things Comedy. We were at that All Things Comedy event.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Which was really fun. Matt, I got to give Al Madrigal and Bill Burr credit. Like, they've really tried to set up this really cool environment, and you know, we did like interviews and they had photos. It was at Largo.
It's a great show.
They put together a great lineup, and I got to see, you know, we got to see like a lot of friends, like who do shows on there.
And Eddie Pepitone was on the show.
Eddie Pepitone. We saw Sean Conroy. You know, we saw Christina Pazinski. I know I'm not pronouncing that correctly. I haven't seen her in forever. And so we're going to start to get a lot of those folks on this show.
Yes.
Which is awesome. And everything that All Things Comedy is doing is really, it's really
cool. You'll see them at the festival too.
Oh yeah, we'll see them at the festival. You know, it's funny how you and I always sort of resisted joining networks for a while.
Yeah, we sure did.
And then these guys came along and it's like, it's really cool what they're doing.
You know, so it kind of matched our philosophy.
It really matched our philosophy.
Because really, when you're a podcaster, you don't have to join a network. You really don't. You know, there's no access that you're not granted,
right?
You know, by doing a podcast or joining a network. So it was really where the philosophy of the network just kind of coincided what we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's other good networks out there. We're not saying that networks are bad. It's just for what Chris and I have been doing kind of all on our own and doing... There's not a lot of other podcasts that are doing all of the other things that we're doing in terms of an online store and movie reviews and and all that stuff. So it really just worked. It worked great. It's really cool.
And we got new TiVos.
We got new TiVos out of the deal.
Even Neil got a TiVo.
Neil got a TiVo. Like, everybody's winning. And all the people that Al and Bill have like kind of assembled to help, like Sam, who's helped putting the show together, and John and all those other people who they're really, it's like people you like and want to work with.
Right.
Which is the key.
So speaking of people we like and want to work with, we have a new sponsor. Oh, but we'll talk to you about it after the lawn guys are done.
Those lawn guys were gone for a year.
Yeah.
And then they just suddenly come back. And this time they came back with like a gang of guys on dirt bikes. It's what it sounded like.
Yeah, they were... Yeah, and Vespas.
Vespas. It was like the loudest. Like, all they need next is like a margarita bar.
They were circling the garage. Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
They knew we were recording, and they decided to shut it down.
Really exciting about this new sponsor, because this is a big sponsor, and we have a whole campaign with them. And it's going to be, with for the next 3 months, we're going to be rolling out some really cool stuff, some great stuff for you guys, some giveaways, some contests. And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds program, Snag Films.
This is really cool because it's obviously so fits into what we're doing here and what you guys like.
Right. And it's not going to cost you anything. That's what we love about it, too.
Here's what Snag Films is, for those of you who don't know. If you go to snagfilms.com/comedyfilmnerds, you can log in, and it's all free. They stream movies completely for free, and they're good films. Like, they don't just put
they
up...
They curate them, yeah. It's not like just a random library. It's they're handpicked and curated by an editorial staff of independent film buffs. So, they're good movies.
And there's a lot of really solid documentaries on there, and their library is continually growing.
Let's be honest. I doubt all of them are great movies.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good docs on there, though. No, they're not all good, but
everything's subjective.
Yeah, everything is subjective. But the point is that they have some docs on there. Like, I just added, and you can add them kind of to your, you can add them to your queue. I just added the.
Oh, it goes beyond that. I mean, not only can you add to your queue, you can actually create your own curated collection, which is
right,
and share it with your friends and say, "Hey, I just watched these movies on Snag, and now you should check them out too."
And that's kind of the stuff that we're gonna start doing as we get on down the road. Today we just want to introduce you guys to them. And again, it's free to sign up.
Yep.
There's no subscription. The way
they make their money is it's advertising.
Yeah,
you're gonna watch a little ad before and probably during and.
But it's not like television where then they cut up the movie and,
right,
and beep out the bad words and all this other stuff. You're seeing the actual film just with little ads dropped in there. But you can register for this for free. And again, go to snagfilms.com/comedyfilmnerds and you'll see a unique landing page when you do that.
And we'll be, like Graham said, we'll be curating our own collections to show you guys, mm-hmm, within the next 3 months. And
I just added a couple of cool... Samurai movies. They have a couple of Zaitochi Blind Swordsman films that I just put in my queue.
Isn't that a shame? He could never see his own movies.
But he can feel them, Chris.
Yes.
we've talked about that in the past. And there's also another cool samurai movie I just added on there. So it's really cool. Go to snagfilms.com, you guys, /comedyfilmnerds. Please use it. Here's why, if you use our landing page, the /comedyfilmnerds landing page, then we can track like how many fans
that we actually sent over.
That we actually sent over there to make sure that this whole sponsorship deal is working
and
out.
And there'll be a button on our site too that you can get there. That'll be up in the next couple days too.
Yeah,
so you can get there as well. Now, I was actually looking too. I didn't add any samurai movies yet, but this movie I've always loved, Metropolis. And they've added the restored 2010 version of it. So you could actually watch that on Snag, which is really cool. And they have Old Boy. You could actually watch Old Boy before Spike Lee's remake. So there's a lot of... It's not just like, you know, indie films that couldn't get distribution. That's like a...
Right.
You know, that's a misconception. It's actually curated movies. It's got... I think there's a... I think Birthday Girl is on there, too.
Well... There's a lot of cool films in there. One of the ones I just put in my queue is the Biggie... Smalls and Tupac documentary about, mm-hmm, that feud, it was one of those documentaries that I always sort of wanted to watch but just sort of fell through the cracks, and now I'm going to go watch it on Snag Films because it goes into the investigation, because you know there was some, when Tupac died there was like a lot of sort of controversy and was there a conspiracy and all that, and this movie goes into that, and I'm going to watch it on Snag Films. And then I also got When the Last Sword is Drawn, which is there's an Oscar,
the other Biggie Smalls documentary.
when Biggie was a samurai, he was a Ronin.
He was Ghost Dog.
He was East Coast West Coast feud, and they settled it with swords. Wouldn't that have been a lot better than shooting Tupac down in Vegas? But anyway, When the Last Sword is Drawn is a samurai story by Oscar winner Yojiro Takeda. Of course, it's about a poor Southern swordsman who joins an elite band of warriors. His pragmatic approach clashes with their rigid code of honor. I'm in. That's all I have, of course. And that director, Takeda, is an Oscar-winning samurai. He's done a lot of samurai films, so I want to see that. And I have On the Road and The Fugitive, 2 Zaitochi films. So
you're set.
I'm already getting samurai films that I haven't been able to watch.
So, and one of the things, too, like we were saying, is that we wanted to really, when we bring sponsors on board here, we wanted to bring value to you guys. It's something you guys really could use. It's something that's reasonably priced, mm-hmm. and it supports us when you guys support the advertisers. So we, but we want to make sure it's something you're interested in too. And this really was perfect for us.
This is, you guys are all really awesome film fans, and we're gonna just you. And again, it's a free way for you guys to support the podcast. When you go, right. when you register to Snag Films and start watching movies on Snag Films through the Comedy Film Nerds landing page, you're helping us.
Yeah, I mean, it's better that you buy a T-shirt and then go to Snag Films. But if you can't afford a book or a T-shirt,
a Palm yeah. Strike shirt yeah. or yeah. a Comedy yeah. Film Nerd shirt,
then if you can, if that's the least you can do, is go to Snag Films.
But here's the other thing too, and this is a 3-month across the board sponsorship deal. We're gonna start to get some swag from them. And you guys are going to start getting some free stuff,
right? In the orders.
In the orders. So, get ready, guys.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. It's going to be Snag Film-alicious. Yeah.
So now let's talk about some movies that that we've seen recently. A horrible weekend for movies to come out. And I do want to mention this. This was in the Entertainment Weekly did a great article about this One Direction movie. This is Us, directed by Morgan Spurlock of all mm-hmm. people. Remember when he was doing really cool documentaries? Like yeah. Super Size Me?
Yeah. yeah. Or just Greatest Movie Ever Sold. That documentary which came out, 2-3 years ago? Was...
Yeah, yeah. So this is clearly a paycheck movie, which is weird for a documentary filmmaker. But
I can't blame the guy. I'm a documentary filmmaker. I would have directed these kids on the road.
But here's the thing, the Entertainment Weekly article, it's weird how sometimes they get some teeth, some of these Entertainment Weekly articles.
They've changed. They used to be such babies. They were such softballs.
And Mark Harris is a great film columnist. But this was an amazing article / review. It talked about how there are no music documentaries anymore. These aren't documentaries. What we used to have...
this is a concert video.
No, this is not. It's not even a concert video. Like, we used to have ones like... like with Gimme Shelter, like
sure.
those were actual rock documentaries.
But, or the Metallica one.
Right, right. Some Kind of Monster. What these are, this one, it mentioned the Katy Perry quote documentary and then also the Justin Bieber one. What they are is these artists, I'll use the term loosely, is selling out concerts nonstop where there's a lot of fans that can't get tickets.
Right.
And they can't see them live. So what they realized they could do is they could make these fake documentaries to service the fans who are not being able to get them to see them live. So you don't get any real behind-the-scenes footage. You don't get anything that's not approved by handlers. What you are, you're supposedly getting a behind-the-scenes version. You're not. You're getting a commercial for the band.
Right. You're just getting a movie version of the live show.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. And that's what I find fascinating is that there are no... rock documentaries anymore. This is what the article brought up, where these things are so manufactured that they're literally hour and a half long commercials for the band in movie theaters.
Right, and you dog-eared the page, but you can't seem to find it.
No, I dog-eared the wrong page, which is really fascinating because how hard is it to dog-ear a page?
There's another dog-eared page. Yeah, you have a bunch of them.
This was Mark Harris's column. That one I got right. So it's really fascinating how... I have to call tech support on the magazine I dog-eared the wrong one.
Harris article you wanted to read.
That was another thing I really recommend. If you didn't get Entertainment Weekly this week, definitely check it out. It's about The Butler.
Oh, okay.
So it was two really interesting articles in one Entertainment Weekly, which is, I don't know if it'll ever happen again, but you definitely want to check it out.
Well, that's really cool. Yeah, it was this movie was this week was like.
Oh, it's called No Ugliness, Please, or Sex or Spontaneity.
Right.
And it's about the One Direction documentary. Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about movies we've actually seen now.
Okay.
I went to see Blue Jasmine over the weekend. This is the new Woody Allen movie. It starred Cate Blanchett, Alec Baldwin, and Andrew Dice Clay, of all people. And.
This is his sort of comeback movie. Like, there's been a lot of buzz about Andrew Dice Clay in this film as sort of coming back a little bit as
yes.
an actor.
And we talk about, you know, going to see movies without any expectations. And I literally went into this movie and I made a conscious effort not to have any expectations, one way or the other, good or bad, because I really just wanted to be very neutral in the way this movie kind of just unfolded and washed over me. And I have to say... it was probably one of my favorite movies of the year.
Really?
It was that good. I absolutely love this movie.
Are you like, you love every Woody Allen movie?
No, but I am a Woody Allen fan, and what's fascinating is I think he's been making movies longer than we've been alive.
Yeah.
And you look at a filmmaker like Woody Allen and his huge, huge body of work, where they're mostly hits, but there, of course, have been a few misses. That's normal for any filmmaker. But to be so on top of your game as a filmmaker in such a late stage of your career was absolutely fascinating to me. And this movie, to give you some setup on this movie, it's kind of like a Streetcar Named Desire, the way it's kind of set up, and where you have the well-to-do sister, that's Cate Blanchett, mm-hmm. whose life kind of crumbled around her and has to move back in with the less well-to-do sister. And there's a little bit of a culture clash there. But this movie is about so many different things at once. And usually when you have a movie that's about many different things at the same time, none of them work. None of them gel. One thing feels like it's not getting serviced. And Woody Allen handles everything absolutely flawlessly. And I'm going to tell you what it hits. It hits family dynamics, dealing with your family, mm-hmm. and just the dysfunction of just being in a family, having, you know, just sisters or brothers or whatever. It deals with mental illness. Cate Blanchett had a nervous breakdown, and also she's got these mentally ill, she has issues. She's on medication, but it doesn't really help. I mean, there's times where she's lucid, and there's times where she's literally going off the rails talking to herself, and it's handled in such an organic and realistic way that you never for once believe that, like, oh, that just feels so contrived. And you have issues about class, when, you know, this, you know, the rich sister and the poor sister, and also about corruption. And of course, you can't have any Woody Allen movie without the theme of infidelity. that is a given in any Woody Allen movie. But everything meshes and is handled so well. It's really, really an amazing movie.
Well, that's one of the, when you talk about how difficult it is for filmmakers to handle all of those different subjects, it's one of those things that Woody Allen has been doing fairly well. I mean, a lot of his movies have been, especially the later generation of films. I mean, obviously in the 70s, they were just pure comedies and they're great. Right. But as he started getting into more of these different themes, and you saw sort of...
And goes more into drama territory than comedy,
right,
absolutely.
Because of what, you know, part of it was just what he was going through. He's handled those... He's one of the few filmmakers that can do that. They
yes.
can handle all these mm-hmm. subject and different characters evenly and thoroughly to where you go, oh, yeah, it
right.
all makes sense. And mm-hmm. you, which shows how difficult it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And how a lesser skilled filmmaker, mm-hmm. it's too much to handle.
And the fact that he's the writer and director too, which helps because nothing gets lost in the translation.
Right.
But the fact that he, you know, at his age and at his career, that can write dialogue and direct scenes that never feel contrived, and they always just feel organic and real, whether he's talking about some rich asshole that ripped off a bunch of people for their wealth, or just somebody who's just trying to, you know, make ends meet by bagging groceries in a supermarket, and make each one of them feel real and not only compelling and have... it's just unbelievable. His voice is unbelievable.
It's also not easy to do when you've been a successful and wealthy, you know,
yes.
filmmaker for 3-4 decades.
Yes. And have also had your share of controversies.
Yeah,
your
own share of controversy. But sometimes, you know, you see when rich Hollywood goes, oh, well, this is what the bagging groceries, and it's just some sort of two-dimensional stereotype.
Oh, yeah. It's like, this is what us rich people think poor people think.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That's what you get.
Yeah.
And with Woody Allen, you don't get that. You get a nuanced, organic approach to just people and different people in different lives. And now, Andrew Dice Clay, this was probably one of the biggest surprises of the movie. I mean, I love the movie, and just watching him... He does an amazing job in this film. And, you know, it answers the question. It's like, God, what would you do with Andrew Dice Clay now? Woody Allen answers that question. This is what you would do with Andrew Dice Clay. First of all, Woody Allen, because he has a comedy background, he knows when to sit on comedians in the direction. He just sees it. Like, you have somebody who could literally go off the rails, off the top, and has a huge persona and a huge personality, and he just taps them down. And he makes them real people. Not only does that, he gives you this such empathy for them. Like, he's the ex-husband. You know, Andrew Dice Clay's the ex-husband who lost his money in, you know, one of these, I don't want to give too much away in the movie, but lost his money and, you know, destroyed the marriage and all this stuff. And he's not even in that many scenes, but the scenes he's in just light up the screen. Like, you forget the guy doing dirty nursery rhymes. I mean, that's how good his performance is. And I got to give a lot of credit to Woody Allen for that. You know, if you know what to do with these talents and put them in the right direction and know how much to sit on them, it really gives an amazing
performance. People forget Woody Allen started as a club comic.
Yes.
He started in nightclubs with...
In, I think, the 60s.
In the 60s with, like, Bob Newhart and Bill Cosby. And,
he did Comedy Records.
Yeah, he did Comedy Records, man, where he would, you know... And so that's where his roots are. So, you know, as a director, he knows exactly the psyche of a guy, especially a guy like Andrew Dice Clay that had such a distinct stage persona, that, oh, guy, and that he went, no, I want to get beneath that guy.
Right.
And that's great. And it makes me want to really see this film.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, since we're not going to do a spoiler alert episode, I did want to say one thing about the ending. I'm not going to spoil it, but sometimes Woody Allen films can be criticized for a lot of and a lot of indie films sometimes where they just end. They don't really wrap up or you know, or like, oh, they just kind of just goes to black. That's it. You know, well, I've like they ran out of film. Right. You know. And with this movie, Woody Allen clearly was aware of it, and the way he ends this film is on such a poignant note where it even says something about where he's in it. I don't, it's hard to describe without giving it away, but the way he ends the movie is it's similar to the way he's ended other movies, but this time it's completely justified.
Right.
Like, there's an unbelievable justification the way he ends this movie. So I can't recommend this movie enough. If you haven't seen Blue Jasmine yet, or if it's not playing near you, make sure you check it out when it does come on DVD. But if you can catch it in the movie theater right now, it's worth it. Go check it out. I mean, it's obviously not a huge big screen movie, but it really is. It's when you see, it's still a movie going experience in the movie theater. It's like an old school kind of visit to the movies. It's really what it feels like. Oh, and Louis C.K. is in it too. And again, he knows how to sit on him.
Right, right. Woody Allen is one of those filmmakers that you kind of want to watch him on the big screen because he does know how to direct actors and compose a shot.
Yes.
And shot composition in a dramedy is kind of a lost art and is still very valuable, you know, because we're all in this CG era and all this other stuff. So
everything from the way an apartment is decorated, what the camera is showing you is information that Woody Allen is conveying to
you. And on a big and on a small screen, you might miss some of that.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And on a big screen, you really need to see it there.
So if you can catch it in the movie theater, definitely check it out. So like I said, one of my favorite movies of the year.
Not that watching it on a DVD or online is like a bad thing.
No.
But if you can,
it's an old school movie going experience. Yeah. Is really what it feels like. It's one of those kind of things that's so refreshing. Is like, oh, here's a movie made by someone with years and years of experience who knows what he's doing. And is not going to talk down to you,
no.
But is going to put his best on the screen for everything he's learned for you to enjoy.
And this is the thing I think about an amazing movie. You see it the first time on a big screen, right? But then it's such a good movie. You want to when you see it when it's on TV or DVD or snagfilms.com/comedyfilmnerds. You know what I mean? So then you're watching it again and you're like, oh.
You get, oh, I missed that the first time.
I missed
time.
That yeah, the yeah. first time. Or that was such a cool scene or whatever. And so you've already had the experience sort of ingrained in you and then you get to kind of relive it again.
Right.
In whatever medium you watch it in. Okay. I saw the movie Ip Man, The Final Fight, which we've talked about. There was an Ip Man movie. There was an Ip Man 2. Ip Man
there's a series of these.
This character is a real person. He's the guy that trained Bruce Lee.
Yes.
And he went through, in the original Ip Man movie, you saw him, you know, he was this very respected kung fu teacher who then the Japanese took over and you know, all that. This starts post-war Hong Kong.
Okay.
And there's even, it just starts out with, there's even just voiceover telling you, you know, the Japanese took his land, they let his some of his children starve and all of this stuff. So this movie, and you know, Rick Myers, we saw clips of this at Comic-Con, and Rick Myers has talked about this. It is, first of all, the lead actor in it is Anthony Wong Chow Sang, and he's a stage actor. He had a British father and a Chinese mother, and so he's like, it's like having like the Chinese version of Anthony Hopkins. Like he's that, you know, has won that many awards and stuff like that. So he's an amazing actor.
So he played Nixon.
Yeah. He's an amazing actor, and he adds like,
excuse bless me. You.
That's the yard guys.
Yeah.
So what is going on is he's
that's what they had in the blowers. That's pollen. What
they just were spraying pollen into the garage. So he's, the movie takes place post-war, and he's an older guy, and he's this legendary grandmaster. And then he's basically forced into fighting one more time. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's like having to fight the triads and everything. So that's, it's really cool. And it's really interesting. And there's some really cool fight choreography. And it's gotten sort of a, you know, it's one of these movies, it's hard to find. It's a limited release.
Very
limited release. You probably have to get it on VOD or something like that. But if you can find it, and especially if you liked the other Ip Man movies and you're a kung fu film fan, you're going to really like this movie. So I definitely recommend it. Ip Man, The Final Fight. So check that out.
All right.
Directed by Herman Yao, by the way. Mm-hmm. For those of you who know, he's done a lot of great films. Go ahead. What else do you got?
Should we talk about... let's talk about Hell Baby. This is the one I saw. This is the horror/comedy movie that's got a lot of Reno 911 people involved in it. And let me just say, when you make horror comedies, you are really going uphill to begin with.
Right.
Especially if, you know, obviously the scary movie, they're just parodies, so they don't really even count as horror movie. Horror comedies, they don't really count as comedies either.
Right.
But when you have a movie like Hell Baby, what they actually try to do something a little different, where it's, you know, there are some legitimate gore and scares, and then they also kind of mix it up with the comedy. The problem is it's such a difficult mix to get right. Often it doesn't get right. And I'm sorry to say they don't get it completely right on this, where it's right. A lot of the jokes, they just don't. They kind of fall flat, and you know, if you're going to do a horror comedy, you really have to set up the horror a little bit more. And it was really just kind of, I mean, basically it was set up by sketch people, and the way the movie is set up is a bunch of interconnected horror sketches with a bit of a through line. You know, obviously she gets pregnant and there's a hell baby inside her.
Right.
But it never really feels like the movie kind of goes anywhere. I mean, it was... It's one of those movies that it's like, can you even criticize it? I mean, basically, it's a comedy sketch horror movie. I mean,
right.
there's not a lot you could say, well, it should have done this or it should have done that.
It has just funny moments in it.
It has funny moments. It is what it is. I mean, it's either going to resonate with you or it's not. And it fell flat a lot of the time for me. But it's... I will give them credit for trying to do something different than, like, you know, just trying to make a Paranormal Activity spoof or right. a parody or whatever, which has been, you know, in all these scary movies like we've been talking about. They legitimately tried to set out to make a horror comedy. And it's just, like I said, it's a tough road to hoe.
The reason why it's a tough... What's up?
I just wanted to see some of the actors because a couple of them did a really nice job. You know, Rob Corddry, Leslie Bibb. Corddry. They did a good job, but I'll tell you, Keegan-Michael Key was unbelievably hilarious. He was really, really funny. So he actually stole every scene he was in. And then, you know, you've got, you know, Tom Lennon and the other guys. They actually, they do a nice job. But again, it's like they're all sketch characters. You don't really get a movie. You get just a bunch of horror-themed sketches and then with a fair amount of gore and violence towards the end.
Do you think the thing that's never really been done, and maybe this would kind of solve the dilemma, is you've usually got comedy people trying to make a horror movie because they're going just purely for the comedy. Do you think there's a way to get people that know the horror genre to make a horror comedy? So it has the elements of horror with comedy that isn't just...
Well, his name's Sam Raimi.
Yeah,
and the answer is yes, because it goes from the other direction. That's exactly what you're talking about. That's a great point, is if you take... You go from the horror direction and you go more towards comedy, you'll have much more success. Whereas if you start in comedy and go towards horror,
then it just comes across as the sketches.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Which isn't bad. I mean, it's like.
I mean, that's what it is. It is what it is. Yeah. Right. But if you get a movie like Drag Me to Hell, mm-hmm. which is Sam Raimi's movie, oh my God, I was laughing out loud at some of those scenes.
Because he's a horror guy directing jokes for you, the horror fan.
Exactly. And the movie was also terrifying in parts.
Right.
So again, it's, I would have to say there's very few people that can pull it off, but always if you come from the horror side first and move mm-hmm. towards comedy, you might have much better success. And then you've always got, you know, Evil Dead and Army of Darkness. Right. So I think it's on VOD too. So if you want to check it out, that's pretty much what it is.
All right. Well, we wanted to kind of talk about the movies of James Gandolfini, because he obviously died in June. And obviously he's best known for The Sopranos,
yes.
which he was great in, which is one of those, and we've talked about it before, it's one of those cinematic TV shows. They're like hour-long movies that would come out every week.
And it was, to give credit too, it was one of the first ones that really put like what a television series can do on the map. Like for pay, it like would really get you to pay for HBO
right.
to see this show.
And I want to talk about some of the movies he did. First, I want to go into some where he first sort of came on the scene. Which was, True Romance was the first time I ever sort of got turned on to who he was, where he played this sort of evil thug, you know what I mean? And there's a scene where there's like a stoned out Brad Pitt, and he comes into the like shack that Brad Pitt's in or whatever, and asks him some questions, you know.
And people are always surprised when he doesn't have the Tony Soprano like drawl or right. the way, yeah. And they're like, no, he can talk like a normal person.
Yeah. And so I want to go into like, and then some other like minor roles he had that kind of stood out to me, like in A Civil Action, which is that John Travolta kind of based on a true story about, there's a small town that the water well was poisoned, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a big lawsuit. And
thank God that doesn't happen in real life.
Big corporations don't do that. The little guy always wins. And, So he plays, James Gandolfini just plays just sort of, because it was like, I think it was like a mill town or, mm-hmm. and just plays, I remember there's just some one-on-one scenes that they
plays have. A mob boss.
No, no, you're no. ruining this.
What? No.
No, listen. he again, kind of played against the Tony Soprano type and just played like a working class guy in a small town who was just sort of like sad that, you know, all these people started getting cancer, if I remember correctly, with Civil Action. And there's just some great interviews and stuff where he's just like, wow. And just sort of the realizations that he has. And that was another, and then there's stuff like, it's not the greatest movie ever, but The Last Castle with Robert Redford, where he played, it's funny. Cause again, cause of Tony Soprano and because of his size, he always played a lot of like,
Thuggy guys
yeah. are just imposing mm-hmm. tough guys or strong characters. like even in the like one of his last movies, The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, he plays like a casino owner. So he's like, right. I'm in charge. And so in The Last Castle, he's the warden of this military prison, but he's kind of a baby. And Robert Redford sort of points out that he's never, he's obviously never seen real combat, like he even says, and that he played sort of a, it's an interesting performance, The Last Castle, because he plays a petty guy. And none of his characters are like petty kind of guys, except this Last Castle.
It's interesting. That type of character and performance is kind of what sank the movie for me.
Right.
It just didn't work as a movie, but I know what you're talking about.
That he would try that, and it is interesting. And then I think, this Killing Them Softly was like, that movie with Brad Pitt, I don't know. The critics didn't like it. It didn't do well with the box office, but like I really liked it. I know Mike Schmidt really liked it. And James Gandolfini is awesome in it because he plays like a believable, he's playing a hitman, mm-hmm. but he's a little nuts, which you would sort of have to.
Did he have a big role in the movie?
Not a huge role in the movie. And that's why he was so good at playing these guys in smaller parts in films. Mm-hmm. And I think he... I think who knows what the mechanics of the operation of his career was, with whatever mm-hmm. big agency he had. But it felt to me like he was like, look, I'm the lead of this very popular TV show.
Right.
So I'm going to just find these cool parts I want to do, mm-hmm. Because it's not like he needed the money. I never got the feeling obviously he was not a big fan of the fame aspect. Like he was not great with interviews and he was very standoffish.
A lot of the cast of The Sopranos were like that.
And so he kind of seemed to me like he looked out for these parts. I mean, even just stuff like he was the CIA director in Zero Dark 30.
Well, The Man Who Wasn't There was a Coen Brothers movie. It was in black and white, and he did an amazing job in that movie. And it's him opposite Billy Bob Thornton. There's this great conversation. There's a scene where James Gandolfini is looking at Billy Bob Thornton and just going, what kind of man are you? I mean, there's this amazing scenes because they're both powerhouse actors.
Right.
And to see them together and just interact like that, it was, it's one of those sleeper movies. It's another hidden gem. If you check out The Man Who Wasn't There, that's the Coen Brothers black and white noir movie with Gandolfini and also... as usual, a bunch of other people.
Well, the other thing, too, that just came out, and I haven't had a chance to see it yet, is Enough Said, which is sort of a, I don't want to call it romantic comedy necessarily, mm-hmm. but it's with Julie Louise Dreyfus. And the trailer, I haven't seen it, but the trailer on it looks interesting, especially because well, it's one of his last films, but it's also like, he's in a romantic comedy. Like I want to see him do this. I want to see him play. He plays like a divorced guy and they start to have a relationship. Like
some cuddly divorcee.
Just a regular guy. Just a regular, I don't know if it's cuddly, but I mean, just.
Well, from the trailer. It's from the trailer. Look out like he's like, yeah, he's the guy you just, he's like a big teddy bear.
Right.
You can't help but like him.
And well, that's what I want to see because Julie Louise Dreyfus is a beautiful woman and what is going to make her attracted to this big dude.
Right.
So it'll be, I'm anxious to see that. So we wanted to, if you guys want.
And if you haven't seen any of those movies, definitely, you should really check them out. I mean, there's a lot of, especially like places like things like Zero Dark 30 and just him, like I said, with Billy Bob Thornton in Man Who Wasn't There, you definitely should check him out.
Zero Dark 30 is great because that's just a great ensemble cast. And there's a lot of great scenes in Zero Dark 30 showing the political maneuvering it was taking to try to make this mission and track it down.
Yeah, no one wants to be responsible for anything, even at the CIA.
Yeah, of course not. And so, he's one of those CIA guys that they got a pitch to and all of the fighting and the political stuff and the stuff, the conversations in the hallway between meetings and stuff like that.
If it's the same guy that Ben Affleck had to pitch to get those people out of Iran, it's that real feeling it's like, I got to convince my boss of this, but he's not going to want to be responsible for it.
And, so there's all that. So check that out, you guys. And maybe, if you want, post your favorite James Gandolfini role in a film on the Facebook fan page.
Yeah. We want to hear from you.
All right.
So what do we got on DVDs coming out?
Well,
Now You See Me. Did you end up seeing this movie?
Now You See Me.
This is the magician movie.
Yeah, I saw this. Yeah. You saw this, I saw this.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
I guess it's worth to watching on DVD.
It's,
right in the background while you do your laundry? Is it one of those films?
Yeah, and only watch like maybe the first three quarters or something like that. I mean, it gets so ridiculous. Oh, now we're at the end of the movie. I won't spoil it if you're really gonna haven't seen it or you want to see it, but basically the end of the movie is from a completely different film than the one you've been watching three quarters of the way through.
So right when that happens, guys, that's a great time to go to snagfilms.com / comedy film nerds and start watching movies there. Right when the Now You See Me falls apart, go watch one of these movies Chris and I recommend.
And then we have the Lords of Salem. Isn't that, that's a doc, right?
The Lords
of... Oh, no, wait, we'll pull that up. While we're talking about that, from Up on Poppy Hill, this is the Miyazaki movie. I really wanted to see this one. This is the coming of age movie. This is, I'm thinking of Lords of Dogtown. Anyway, from Up on Poppy Hill, this is the Miyazaki animated movie about a coming of age girl in Japan. And it looks phenomenal, but not for young kids. They're going to be bored. But I can't wait to see it. As an animation fan, I just can't wait to see it.
Lords of Salem is the Rob Zombie movie.
Lords of Salem is the Lord Zombie movie.
Not the skateboarding movie.
Not the skateboarding movie, no.
That's the Lords of Dogtown.
Yeah, yeah. Lords of Salem, it's the Rob Zombie movie. Isn't it about like a record that a DJ plays and then it makes people crazy?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go back to, I want to talk about this movie, The Ice Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This movie, I saw it. It's great. You know, Michael Shannon is the lead. He plays the true story of Richard Kuklinski, the contract killer.
I have a question. Is he a little off-putting when he's on screen?
Oh, God. Yeah. And Michael Shannon is really good in this movie. This is, it got a limited release. It's an excellent film. Chris Evans is great in it. And it's really one of the finer roles. You know, it's like, I think it's Michael Shannon's maybe first, like, lead, maybe he said a couple others, but he's really good in this movie. And I know it got a limited release, so if you didn't get a chance, it didn't come to a theater near you, please check this out now. It's a really good DVD, or film to watch on DVD, rather.
And the stories we tell, this is a documentary that Sarah Polley made, and this is it has a really interesting premise. It's one of those documentaries that just set out to document her family, and then they started telling the truth about her family that she did not expect. So I'm curious to see this movie.
Which
as well.
I think those are some of the best documentaries.
Yeah, the serendipitous ones.
When someone goes out, I'm just going to shoot this thing. And then it's like, oh my God. And then you see the filmmaker having this like intense emotional experience based on the information they're uncovering, which is excellent. And then, of course,
Sharknado.
Sharknado.
So
go see it.
I wonder what that's about.
Anyway. I think that's a documentary.
about skateboarders?
About skateboarders, yeah.
So we have coming out this week, Neil already has his tickets for Riddick.
Why? What's Neil's problem?
You know what? I don't know. You know, he's still mad at us for giving Elysium such a pass. He's furious about that movie.
Well,
I had to give him a TiVo to calm him down.
How is the Chronicles of Riddick getting
a
sequel?
No, this is just Riddick.
No, that's what I mean. Oh, yeah. Now, how is it getting a fucking sequel?
I don't know. It's got these weird overseas financing deals over there. So I don't know. It definitely was not American studio. Wow, the printer's going crazy.
Well, first of all, okay, I guess this is the third part of the trilogy from Pitch Black.
Well, I think that's being generous when calling it a trilogy. Really, it's just Riddick being in these movies.
But why does this keep happening? Pitch Black was not a good movie. Chronicles of Riddick was ridiculous. Necromongers?
Yeah.
What?
Isn't it great to just put two disparate words together just for at random?
So you love death? Or
yeah,
you're...
yeah, it's a table chair.
Yeah,
you could just say like
necromonger.
Yeah, or fridge pewter.
What? Like, I don't understand any of this. I don't understand why this keeps happening.
So
I don't know what is going on.
You know, Vin Diesel, he's got a lot of love in the movie fan base.
I guess. I mean, they say that they claim the budget on this is $38 million. So maybe that's why. It's just like...
It's a lower budget movie.
But we'll just crank out another Riddick movie every 7 years one of these comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like the 7-Up films.
I don't.
So like Riddick, we're going to see Riddick in the old folks' home, yeah. Riddick's grandchildren. Like...
I think it's going to happen. I think every 5 to 7 years there will be another Riddick film until people stop going to see them.
We're in that fall...
Dumping ground.
Like, the summer movies are over. The Oscar movies haven't started yet. By the way, we should do some sort of Oscar preview coming up because... Maybe we'll do it at the podcast festival yeah. because I was just reading about, there's a lot of really awesome movies coming out. Riddick is never going to be one of them.
No.
Ever. For anything.
Yeah. it won't even get the word recommended next to it.
No. So... Also coming out, limited release, is the Salinger movie where Philip Seymour Hoffman, I believe, plays J.D.
There's Salinger. There's a lot of Salinger stuff coming out right now. There's like a documentary. There's a narrative. There's I think there's even a book came out, too. It's some weird Salinger push all at the same time, which is so anti-everything he ever stood for.
I guess this is more of a documentary. I'm completely mistaken. I'm sorry.
No, this isn't the narrative.
Well, then why does it say that they're all playing themselves? I guess.
So, okay, no, then this is the, see, again, yeah, there's so many things coming out right now. This must be the doc, and then there's a narrative one either in development or in the works, and then there's a book that just came out, too.
Right, so this Salinger is a documentary.
Okay.
And it just was released this week in Australia, and it's coming out, it was released September 5th in Australia, and it's coming out this weekend here. So it's limited release. So it's all these actors, Edward Norton, John Cusack, Martin Sheen, Gore Vidal, talking about J.D. Salinger, I guess. And it's just a look inside the private world of J.D. Salinger. So it's expensive
documentaries. Did that just say $2
million? Yeah, it's a $2 million budget for this.
Well, maybe it has recreations in it.
Yeah, apparently it's got some interesting stuff. And then they've got, you know, J.D. Salinger's archival footage. Cause you know,
That's him shutting a door on a reporter.
Yeah. That's all it is. Just his hand in the face of some camera. So, it's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see this. I'd like to know more about J.D. Salinger.
All right. Well, that is, it's actually, even with Riddick, it's a better weekend for movies than last weekend.
Come on. Just by J.D. Salinger documentary just outweighs it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman in a movie. That's all you need to make it a better weekend.
Even just him talking into his camera as himself is better than what happened last weekend.
So, okay. So we got a lot more that we want to just kind of let you guys know. Obviously, we're getting closer to the Los Angeles Podcast Festival, and tickets are selling. So if you're on the fence, you should really come.
You should really come. We do need to announce, unfortunately, the top...
That it's canceled.
We're canceling the whole thing. City of Santa Monica shut us down.
Yeah.
No. Todd Glass, unfortunately, just had to cancel recently, which was a bummer. I don't know if he's announced it, but he got some gigs that he couldn't pass up, which I totally understand. So we're really bummed that Todd's not going to be there. However,
here's who we've been adding.
Here's who we've added. Comedy Bang Bang, Scott Aukerman is going to show an episode of the IFC show, Comedy Bang Bang, and then do a Q&A afterwards.
Yes, and it'll be an episode that has not aired yet.
You'll be able
to see it weeks, possibly months in advance.
Right, so that's really cool. We've just added John Lovitz.
Yes.
He's going to be doing...
Lovitz or Leavitz.
Lovitz or Leavitz.
So it's his podcast.
He's doing his podcast. And also Kira Soltanovich, who's got her like mother parenting podcast, is going to be doing it.
And also, I don't know if we've mentioned this before, that Welcome to Night Vale will be doing a show Saturday, but also they're going to be doing a panel Sunday, Welcome to Night Vale, because they do things very differently than a lot of other podcasts. Mm-hmm. They're going to go through the process, and it will be moderated by none other than Mr. Graham Elwood.
How about it? It's going to be exciting. If you go to lapodfest.com, there's a couple little schedule tweaks. Things might shift a little bit, but everything... Because we got to shuffle some stuff around because of the Todd stuff and adding these shows. But
I'm going to have a great closing night party.
Great closing night party. That MailChimp, there's going to be free food and free cocktails.
Yes, and a live karaoke band.
Live karaoke band.
Karaoke, which is actually kind of a famous LA live karaoke band.
So you're going to see stars from the TV and movies of the 80s.
Yeah. No relation.
No relation.
There's a disclaimer on the website.
if you ever saw Summer School, you're going to really love this band. So it's going to be a lot of fun, you guys, and there might be some other parties, sponsored parties, yes, that are coming in.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be well worth the price of admission. You'd make it up in food and drink alone.
You will. You will. Just, you can eat $100 worth of food and booze on that last night.
Seriously, I know. I know you people. You
I
will.
I know you savages. You drunk hoarders.
So calling all drunk hoarders, the LA Podcast Festival. Tickets while you can.
So come on out, you guys. Go to lapodfest.com. It is October 4th through the 6th. And of course, we will be there doing our show, and there's going to be a lot of celebrities. Get your family. There's the a lot of big shows are going to be in the Squarespace Ballroom and also the Squarespace Lab, where any smaller shows can come and just record and bring your own recording equipment to this, to the lab, and get interviews with anybody that's on the floor.
We'll be walking around, and any other comedians that, or personalities you can grab, you know, we're there, we're available to do interviews.
And I would suggest to some of you probably are already planning to do this, like if you haven't already, start emailing other podcasters that you know are going to be there and set up interview times with them, because I'm sure most of them would be really happy to come do your show.
Absolutely, yeah.
So check that out, you guys. LA Podcast.
Graham and I can't do all of them.
We can't do all of them. but we'll do as many as we can.
Yes.
LAPodFest.com, you guys. Thank you guys so much. Again, go to snagfilms.com/comedyfilmnerds and sign up. We're going to be rolling out
for free.
For free, and watch movies for free. And you can start telling us, oh, I saw this movie, it's really cool, and we're going to get into a lot more stuff.
Yes.
Setting up your own collections. And
this is just your preview.
This is just your preview, your kids. Trailer. There's going to be contests, there's going to be giveaways, there's going to be all kind of delicious business. So I will be this weekend, September 7th, I will be in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania with Doug Benson, and then doing stand-up comedy, and then the winner, whoever beats me and Leonard Maltin at the end of that stand-up comedy show, will be on the Doug Loves Movies podcast recording Sunday, September 8th at Helium Comedy Club in Philly.
It's like a two-tiered contest.
Yeah, it's a two-tiered contest. So come on out, guys. Those will be fun shows. You can see stand-up and the podcast, and who knows, maybe you will be in the show. And then we'll be... Saturday, September 14th, we'll be in St. Louis doing a multiple. Doug has got several podcasts and stand-up shows at the Firebird again, in St. Louis. And then we will be in Milwaukee on September 15th. So check all of that out.
All right. And I actually wanted to mention, too, I haven't plugged this in a while. I have my short film collection, Myopic Visions, actually on the site. This is all my short films from HBO and the Sci-Fi Channel, about hitmen, leprechauns, killer suits, and all sorts of filmy goodness. So you can, I will sign it for you as well, so if you buy it from the Comedy Film Nerd site. And we are, speaking of that, we are still in the process of upgrading the card, but it is functional now. You can use it. Mm-hmm. You can buy it. We still have a couple little tweaks to do. So if you guys wouldn't mind being beta testers, if you notice something that's off,
let us
please
know.
Email.
Also, too, you know, we've mentioned this in the past, but we haven't done it in a while because we know there's a lot of new fans that have joined, and thank you guys. Thank you guys who have been listening from the beginning, and any new fans, welcome. If you want to come see us perform, first of all, you could email if you have a comedy club near where you live and say, oh, bring Graham Elwood and Chris Mancini, because we could come do stand-up and record the podcast. And also, if you know someone or run a venue, a rock club, a theater, and you think we could make it work financially, email us, man. We've done those shows before.
Yeah.
And they're a lot of fun. So let us know, guys. And of course, like us on Facebook and Twitter and all of those things. And positive reviews on iTunes.
Yes. Thanks for all that stuff.
Thanks all that. Many of you who have been doing that and following us for years, thank you. And to the new fans, welcome. And if you want to do that, that'd be great. All right, you guys, that is our program, episode 176.
Put in the can.
And put in the books. Mm-hmm. Lock it down, as the Rock said in Fast and Furious 6. And no one listened to him.
Yeah.
So we'll see you guys at the midnight showing of Riddick.
Yeah, are you saying you didn't lock it down?
I did not lock it down. So thanks again for listening. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Riddick.
Riddick. Go see Riddick and tell us what your fucking problem is.